This is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this show on Free Speech TV nationwide and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates. After many decades of male-centered superhero movies, Hollywood has finally managed to release a female-centered one, and none other than the hero who has inspired countless girls and women for generations, Wonder Woman. Wonder Woman has returned to the big screen decades after Linda Carter first portrayed the feminist icon on film. Directed by a woman, Patty Jenkins, this new Wonder Woman film features Israeli actress Gal Gadot in the lead. It has already broken box office records, raking in more than $100 million in its first weekend in North America alone, and earning the distinction of being the biggest opening for a film directed by a woman in history. Does the new Wonder Woman film live up to the hype? To help answer that question is our film critic and pop culture correspondent, Stephanie Abraham. Stephanie is a writer and media critic. She helped to found the feminist magazines Makeshift and Loudmouth. Her works have been published in McSweeney's Al Jazeera magazine, Al Jazeera, Mizna, Bitch magazine, and Ms. magazine, where her review of Wonder Woman will be out soon. Welcome back to the show, Stephanie.
Thanks for having me, Sonali.
So I haven't had the chance to watch Wonder Woman yet. I plan on watching it. It is a big deal. It's a big deal for women for a long time. I mean, countless girls have dressed up as Wonder Woman for Halloween, for many, many years. She's seen, this comic book superhero is seen as this feminist icon, even though she's, you know, scantily clad like a lot of women in the comic book superhero world are. Why do you think Wonder Woman is so important to women, and why do you think this particular film has also seemingly resonated enough to break these box office records?
Well, those are important questions. So Wonder Woman, from her inception in 1942, was created, as you said, in the comic book world, and she was a representation of feminism at that time. So she was often shown in chains, and she would always break herself free and liberate herself from those chains. At that time, the chains were used in a lot of representations within the suffragist movement, and they represented patriarchy. So the creator played off of that, and it was intentional. And so that's, you know, from her birth, she's been kind of alongside feminism. In 1972, when Ms. Magazine was founded, Gloria Steinem chose Wonder Woman as the first cover girl. So, and the slogan was Wonder Woman as president. So that kind of catapulted her into, you know, an international platform of being seen as a feminist icon. Now, in terms of why this movie is resonating so well, I mean, what's happened, as you said, you know, its budget was $148 million. It already surpassed that in the first week, which is very unusual, and it's made all sorts of records. So as you said, like the biggest opening for a female director. I think a lot of that has to do with the poor state of affairs in the film industry, where I think only 4% of films are directed by women. But also audiences are craving, they're starving for representation of women in positions where they're doing something else besides being subservient.
Or and just being a sidekick, or being a sex object, yes, or a vamp, or whatever. In fact, we've had such a string of very popular superhero movies. You know, if we look at the movie posters, it's all testosterone just bursting out on the screen.
Yeah, it really is. And so Wonder Woman fills that void. I mean, people are really starving for it. It's kind of exciting. You know, one thing that the current administration has done is catapult the word sexism back into our daily conversations. And so I feel like people are recognizing gender oppression and sexism, male domination, patriarchy, all of these terms that sometimes only maybe a small minority of feminists would use are now being used in mainstream media. So This film comes at the right time for sure.
And so, of course, this was the year that kicked off with the Women's March, and it's only fitting that you have this Wonder Woman film come out. Let's talk about some of the controversies around the film. One of them is that the film's lead is played by Gal Gadot, an Israeli actress who has been portrayed, who actually has been a self-professed supporter of the Israeli Defense Forces, like all Israelis, young Israelis. She served in the Israeli Defense Forces herself, so she was in the army, in the Israeli National Forces. And this has been used by some people, some organizations, as a way to criticize the film, saying, I'm not going to go watch a film where the lead character is played by a woman who, in real life, has participated in the oppression of Palestinians. What do you make of this controversy?
Right. So what happened was in 2014, she posted a picture of herself and her young daughter, who maybe was 3 or 4, praying in traditional Jewish garb. And the commentary was, it was during the Gaza bombing, Israel's bombing of Gaza, which I think is really important from the outset to talk about. Those were U.S. weapons that Israel used. So I feel like it's very easy to target Israel and their terrible militarism, which is terrible. But also, I think we have to bring United States and U.S. imperialism into the conversation. So during that time, she posted this picture and she said, you know, we're with our soldiers, which isn't uncommon for people to say they're praying for their soldiers. I feel like Americans do that all the time. But one of the hashtags was, you know, hashtag we are right. And I mean, the propaganda about Palestinians being terrorists is very extreme in Israel, as it is in the United States. But to have this woman who's, you know, this character who's supposed to fight for global justice and peace, and then have the actor kind of profess her support of this really barrage of bombings over 50 days when I can't remember if you said, but over 2,000 Palestinians were killed, and most of them, the UN has said, are civilians. Is quite ironic. And so Lebanon has actually boycotted the film; they're not showing it in their country. And lots of people in the U.S. are boycotting it as well for that reason.
The other controversy was around a backlash generated by a small theater called the Alamo Draft House that decided to have women-only screenings of Wonder Woman. And for some reason, this got picked up on social media, and a lot of men were extremely upset about this. What exactly happened, and why were men so upset?
Yeah, I find this actually quite annoying. So a theater decided to have some women-only showings, you know, because of all we already discussed about sexism and how women really identify with Wonder Woman. And they wanted to, you know, celebrate the film together. So some men got mad and they wrote, you know, letters and complained about it. And the mayor was really great. He wrote the most clever email back to someone who wrote and said, I'm sorry, sir, I think your email has been hacked by a very ignorant man, and I think you should take care of that. So that was
hilarious.
And this
is Austin, Texas, I should say, the Alamo Draft House Theater in Austin, Texas. Did they have the proceeds from those screenings benefiting women's health?
Not that I know of. Okay. And that's what I find so annoying, is that this story was really blown up into something very big of like, why are people protesting the women only showings? And it's like, if you see those pictures of Trump signing the ordinances or whatever against women in the first days, and everyone surrounding him are only men signing off on, you know, cuts on women's health, like where was all the hype about that? Or that was men only, you know what I mean? So I don't think it was worthy of such a story.
And a lot of people were, you know, a lot of men were really upset about that. And you just don't get that sort of female backlash when you have comic book films or superhero films featuring, you know, all men or mostly all men. So let's talk about let's talk about the maybe most important part of this conversation, which is, what did you think of the film? Is the film good? Just, you know, if you set aside who, what the lead actor's background is, if you set aside the sort of fragile masculine backlash to these women-only screenings, and if you even set aside the political context of the moment we're living in today, does the film stand up on its own as a good film?
Honestly, I give the film a B.
Really?
Thought it was good. Yeah, I thought it was okay. It wasn't actually that impressive. I was way more excited by Rogue One. I thought that was more, I mean, that wasn't a superhero, but that was a big blockbuster that had a woman lead. This was just, I don't know, it was okay. You know, there's lots of regular, ordinary, you know, sexist things that are still in the film that just are not that exciting. I mean, it's great to see women kick ass, and they really do. But I think, you know, the film could have been a little shorter. There was a foil, like a woman, this evil woman who's a chemist. She's called like the Supreme Psychopath or something, which was just this like undercurrent story. She was high up in the German army making this gas that was going to kill everyone. It was pretty unnecessary. So just like that, I don't know. It was good. I recommend it, but it wasn't great. It was okay.
So just somewhat okay. All right. I mean,
yeah,
Patty Jenkins.
I guess I kind of feel bad saying that, but I really wasn't.
The film was directed by a woman. Now, that's also quite unusual to have a superhero film directed by a woman. You know, you certainly, I don't know if Patty Jenkins will be asked to direct the next male-centered superhero film, but the female director of this film, how significant is it? And could you tell from watching the film that a woman directed it?
That's an interesting question. You know, I'm telling you, we're in the dark ages when you talk about Hollywood. This is only the third time that a female director has had the opportunity to direct a superhero film. And it's the first time that they've had a budget over $30 million. So, I mean, you know, that's just unbelievable. You know, I can tell, I don't know, she didn't write the screenplay, but they did try and do some interesting things with race and representation. I'm not sure how much of that came from Patty Jenkins. Like, for example, in The Motley Crue, so Steve is a U.S. spy working for England during World War One. That's kind of the plot that's taking place in this rendition of Wonder Woman, and he is her, you know, kind of love interest, because there has to be a love story in a superhero film. Thankfully, she actually doesn't compromise her integrity for him, which I was really relieved to see. But anyway, he has this motley crew of guys, and one of them is a Native American, and he goes by Chief. So that's pretty unheard of, to have a Native American in the early 1900s in Europe. I feel like that was, you know, intentionally done. And he says that it's Steve's people who, you know, took the lives of so many of his own people in the last war. So it's like calling out, you know, the U.S.'s role in genocide, which is pretty unheard of in a superhero film as well. And then there's also an Arab character. His name is Samir, who says that, you know, it's really weird. He says, I wish I could have been an actor, but I'm the wrong color. Which, you know, all of us are having these discussions about race and representation probably more than ever now. But it was just kind of out of context. It really didn't belong there. But I feel like it was a filmmaker's intention to call out Hollywood. Unfortunately, they weren't that thoughtful when it came to the representation of the race of the women on the island. So Wonder Woman comes from this paradise island where it's an intentional commune of only women. So it fit right in with the second wave that had a lot of separatists who said, like, we choose not to live with men. But the warriors are awesome. They're really incredibly strong. All the women there are warriors, but they're all like tall and thin, and they could be walking down a runway. And I only saw Black women and white women, mostly white women and some Black women. I didn't see any South Asians or East Asians. Like, so it's also, it's very narrow in that way. And unfortunate, you know, that they chose to uphold such a strict sense of beauty and what is acceptable. I mean, especially with, you know, the body positivity movement that's gaining steam, like I feel like there could have been fat women and there could have been like thick, short, you know, strong women who aren't
just real women, right? Just real normal women. So basically, you're saying that most of the female characters embody the kind of perfection that is expected of women physically, and and that just kind of plays right into our society's sexism.
Yeah, so it ends up kind of being like soft porn. I mean, that's kind of harsh to say, but I mean, they're beautiful. They all could be on a runway. And even in one of the pivotal battlefield scenes, Wonder Woman is in her very short, you know, seductive like outfit, and she's strutting. She could have been on a catwalk. And so in that way, I guess that's why I gave it a B, you know, B leaning towards B minus. It was just like, really? She has to be strutting right now? That type of representation I just find boring.
Yeah, I mean, because that's all the representation women have on the big screen. And it would be nice once in a while to get something a little bit different. And so on the issue of racial representation and on women's bodies representation, it's also sort of fails. What about on the issue of, you know, does Wonder Woman have any moments where you see the Bechdel test in motion? No. I mean, I'm assuming there are lots of Bechdel test moments that it does pass because there's mostly women, right?
You would assume that, Sonali, but unfortunately, no. Slate magazine has
really?
An awesome article. Yeah, Slate has a great article out right now. It says, "I wish Wonder Woman was as feminist as it thinks it is." And it only passes the Bechdel test in the first 15 minutes when they're on the island. After that, she takes off with Steve to be in London, and then she's mostly just surrounded by men. Steve's secretary is helping her find an outfit to wear that's not so like provocative, which is also like, really, that's the Bechdel test where they're just chatting, you know. And we have to acknowledge the Bechdel test is, you know, what is it? Two women characters talking about something else besides a man. And people use this as a qualification to say if it's a feminist film. And really, it's the bottom of the barrel. I mean, it's really the bottom of the barrel. It's not even a test we should use. And it doesn't even pass that. This is what's so disturbing.
I thought for sure it would have passed that. And so I thought this would be sort of a minor question, but wow. You know, that's not to, of course, say that people shouldn't go watch the film. Again, the fact that it was directed by a woman is certainly an important barrier. But yes, of course, our film critic gives it a B to B minus. Stephanie, I want to thank you so much for joining us today. We will have you back on very soon to talk about yet another film. And also people can look in Ms. Magazine for your upcoming article about this film, right?
Yeah, that's right. It'll be online probably today or tomorrow.
Well, Stephanie, we'll post a link to that from our website later today. Thanks as always for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Stephanie Abraham is a writer and media critic. She helped to found the feminist magazine Makeshift and was a founding editor of Loudmouth. Her works have been published in McSweeney's, Al Jazeera, Mizna, Bitch Magazine, Muse Magazine, and more. And she's our pop culture correspondent and film critic. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. You can also find us on Facebook, Twitter, iTunes, and Vimeo.